It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Hello, everyone. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma here. You're listening to the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. And joining us in our first segment on the podcast this week is Anita Marks. Anita does the Giants pregame, amongst many other things, which we'll get to everything that you do. I mean, you're everywhere. It's like you're omnipresent. You'd be one of Clyde Frazier's favorite people because he'll get to use that word over and over and over again in describing you. You know, he's a Wordsworth, Anita. It's just a pleasure listening to him, and it's a pleasure having you on the show with us. Anita, you grew up in Miami. We're going to talk football in a second, but I have to get to a couple of these things about you. I hope you don't mind.
No, absolutely. Let's do it.
Yes, you grew up in Miami. Now, one of the fascinating things, one of the first things I saw, and it fascinates me because I did it myself, you played football on the street. And who, I mean, what better thing is there than to get in a huddle in the street and say, it's just like the old Bill Cosby bit, go behind the black Chevy and I'll fake it to you. I mean, how cool is it playing with the guys, you know, playing
you
football
know,
on the street?
This was really interesting. I'm not sure where you grew up.
New Jersey.
In Jersey. Well, in South Florida, we would have streets, and then you would have driveways that you were able to pull your car up to your garage or your front
right.
door. But in between were these patches of grass. So it was kind of like, all right, we played touch in the street, but if you made it in the grass, then it was tackle.
It was on and, like Voltron, yeah.
You know, and it was just so much more fun tackling the boys because, as I'm sure as you know, you know, growing up as a girl, you develop faster than guys,
right?
And so, really, guys don't reach your height or your weight
till later. Absolutely, yeah. I was 5'2" as a freshman. Yeah, I was 5'2" as a freshman.
I was destroying the fellas, and then I got to like. Then
sounds like you liked it too.
Like no more tackle in the grass. No more tackle in the grass.
See, back then, I mean, my parents had a huge side yard, and we didn't care. I mean, there were roots all over the yard. We played tackle on the grass. We played touch in the street. But my parents had these sticker bushes that lined the outside of the grass. We would tackle each other into the sticker bushes. You know, we look back, we're like, what the hell were we thinking? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
It was crazy as a kid. You just don't have the same fears as you. Like, I remember like jumping off of the roof of my home sometimes. I mean, you just didn't care, and somehow, some way, you were invincible. But yeah, nonetheless, I did grow up in a neighborhood just filled with guys, filled with fellas.
Right.
Tried to get them to play Barbies. Tried to get them to play dolls. They
Not
wanted nothing
it.
To do with it. So when in Rome,
absolutely.
I started playing football and baseball and basketball and you name it. And I was, I just ended up being the biggest tomboy in the neighborhood.
Well, you played for the Miami Fury. You were their quarterback. You're now the sideline reporter for the UFL. You host a fantasy football show amongst the Giants pregame show on WFAN. Tell me a little bit about your playing days with the Miami Fury. I mean, you were able to take all that stuff from your childhood, and well, you played flag football in college for 4 years, and you parlayed all of that into playing for a women's professional football team. So tell me what that was like playing quarterback for the Miami Fury.
Well, first and foremost, you know, there's no farming system for women in regard to professional football. Like you cannot, there's no college or universities do not offer a football program for women. So probably my advantage is the fact that I did grow up in a neighborhood filled with guys. I did grow up playing football, and I actually played like Pop Warner, Pee Wee Pop Warner football. So mm-hmm. I started football at a very early age. Then, as you said, went to University of South Florida, played the flag football circuit, represented the college, University of South Florida, in the flag football championships each and every year in New Orleans during Christmas and New Year's during the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
And once I graduated college, I actually had a few men's teams who asked me to come quarterback for them.
Wow.
So I'd travel around the country and I would quarterback for a few teams, and I really got really hot and heavy into the flag football circuit. And at the same time, a gentleman by the name of J.T. Turner, who played for the University of Miami and also the Minnesota Vikings, mm-hmm. started this barnstorming tour out of Minnesota with women's professional football back in 1998.
Kind of like Babe Ruth, how he used to make money in the off season. He would just go across the country.
Right. And so he put together these four women's teams, and they would travel around the country, but the pay was not good.
Right.
So I said, listen, I love football, and I would love to play women's tackle football. I said, you know, but I'm not going to move to Minnesota, and you cannot pay me enough money for this barnstorming tour.
Right.
You know, if you bring a team to Miami, I'll play. So sure enough, a year later, he calls me and he says, listen, we're having a tryout at the Orange Bowl. I'd like for you to come out and try out. And I was like, try out? Okay. I was like, okay, try it. I'll come try out.
That's so a slap in the
face. I tried out, and so I played 4 years for the Miami Fury. I quarterbacked for the Miami Fury for 4 years. And then the last year, I actually switched teams. I played for the Florida Stingrays, and that was my final year, and we went to the championship. But the championship, you know, because there were some teams that maybe they'd get anywhere between 6,000 to 9,000 fans. We
right.
were lucky if we got 500 fans at the Orange Bowl because, you know, I mean, even the Dolphins don't sell out if they're
yeah.
not playing the Jets or the Patriots at home. You know, it's ridiculous. So, whoever had the better record would host the championship game. So long story short, championship game, my final year, Kenosha, Wisconsin, 18 degrees below zero.
Oh, man.
I throw four picks in the first half. We lose 52-12. I'm an absolute mess. For the first time in my life, I'm like telling my offensive coordinator, like, let's run the ball. He's like, are you not feeling well? I'm like, no, I'm not. And this is horrible. Whoever thought to play? We were the Florida Stingrays, and they had these stingrays frozen in blocks of ice, and they were hung from the raptors by their tails. I mean, it was just...
They're serious in Kenosha about their women's football,
I guess. Situation. So, but anyway, but at the same time, probably the best 5 years of my life playing women's professional football. It was fantastic.
That's tremendous, and I'm very glad you had the opportunity to do something like that, because as you said, there's just not a lot of opportunity for women if they do like playing the game. I mean, you have the lingerie football league. I don't know how you feel about that. But I'd like to get your thoughts.
There's a few girls, believe it or not, there's a few girls that I played with on the Miami Fury.
Right.
That now play in the Lingerie Bowl. In fact, the quarterback of the Miami team, her name is Anaka Dixon.
Right.
And so she used to be one of my wide receivers and our safety for the tackle team, the Miami Fury. And so I give her a hard time. I'm like, the only thing you girls do is keep Victoria's Secret, like, in business. That's all you guys do. Like, don't even tell me it's football. I give them a hard time, but, you know, in all honesty, it is putting women's football on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously guys tune in because they're very attractive women and they've got great bodies and they're playing football. So all the power to them. But I kind of think it's a slap in the face. But, you know,
okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, you're more, you know, traditional. You want to play the game the way it's meant to be played and not be a sex symbol throwing a football. I mean, but you have to admit, Anita, I mean, look in the mirror. You are a sex symbol when you played football.
No.
Come on. Stop. I know you're turning red, but you are.
I am. weren't we going to talk football?
Yes, and that's where I'm going right now. You covered the Giants, as we said, on WFAN with the pregame show. So let's start with the Giants. I know the Jets made it further, but the Giants were a 10-win team. They missed out on the playoffs. The Seahawks are 7-9. I'm not even going to go down that road. You know, that's another conversation for another day. But you have to agree that the Giants had everything going their way, and they had the postseason in their grasp. They're the ones who let it slip through their fingers. They have no one to blame but themselves, right?
Well, true story. I'm sitting in the press box. They're just absolutely destroying the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
Into the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter, Kevin Moss scores the touchdown. And by the way, I do the pre and I do the post as well. So I turn to my producer, and we have like a highlight segment on our post-game show. So I turn to my producer, Pete, and I said, Pete, listen, here are the highlights. End it with the Kevin Moss touchdown. I'm going to use the ladies' room. I'll be right back. So I come back. I return, and of course I stopped off to get some rice pudding, don't you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I return, and Brent Celek had already scored his touchdown, and I think Manningham had fumbled the ball already, and they were about to kick the onside kick, and they recovered, and I turned to Pete and I said, "What is going on here? What happened? Is this the same game? Who's out there? What team are they playing? Like,
yeah.
What is going on here?" I could not believe it. Within a fraction of a second, I return, and the game just got out of hand, and it was just a snowball effect. It was surreal sitting in that press box and watching it unfold, and then sitting there and covering that Dodge like I did all season long. And let me just say, like, I adore the kid. He's a fantastic young man. And I know a lot of Giants fans out there are scratching their heads saying, like, why are the Giants keeping him on board? I've been covering football for a very long time. I've never seen anyone punt a ball like Matt Dodge. That young man could punt a ball 90 yards. Now,
okay.
It's an investment. it's an investment because right now, yes, he's got some problems upstairs. You know, and it's about being confident, and it's about being an athlete, and it's about wanting to be, you know those athletes like a Kobe Bryant who, like, you know, and I actually can't stand Kobe Bryant, but beyond that, like, you just know the game's coming down to the wire, and he wants the ball. He wants to make that play. Like, that's the mentality. That's where Matt Dodge has to get to, and I believe that he will get there, but right now, he's just very, like, you know, it's a mental thing with him. And I look down and I see his hand shaking, and I turn to my co-host, Paul, and I said, Paul, I have a really bad feeling about this. Like, I'm not, and sure enough, he punts the ball. He, like, DeSean Jackson, and we all know what happened.
Right. We don't want to go back there.
I'm sitting there going, like, is this a dream? Is this a bad nightmare? Did this really happen?
Well,
many people wanted to blame the Giants and Perry Fuel and the defense, and they let up and they didn't blitz and they didn't do this, and Tuck was, you know, backpacking the coverage. You name me another quarterback in the NFL that could have engineered that. Like I honestly
Aaron
feel
Aaron Rodgers.
No. Not like, yeah, I mean, could Aaron, yeah, could he have done half of that? Yeah. Could he have made the game interesting?
No,
yeah.
Michael Vick,
but,
you're
but
right.
Michael Vick
is unbelievable.
He went Sandlot football, and he was to me, he was the dagger in the Giants season.
Well,
so I'm not gonna sit here and blame the Giants. That was a Michael Vick performance like no other.
Well, I let's go back to Matt Dodge for a second, because I have to tell you that is some interesting commentary that you just threw out there, because I haven't heard that yet about the kid. You know, all I see is what I see on Sunday when I watch the games. I've never punted on a professional level, but I've done it before, and it was basically my forte, which should tell you how good I was at football. But that's what I did, and I understand, like, you're a young kid. When you're breaking in as a rookie in New York, it's not going to be easy. You know, you're under a microscope. It's
That's
a different
an understatement.
Yeah, it's different than, you know, Matt Dodge being drafted by the Seattle Seahawks and being on the other side of the country and not, you know, no one 7-9. No one's even paying attention to the Seahawks. He could have a couple of shanks. No one's going to see him. But if he has shanks in the New Meadowlands Stadium, first year they're playing there with the New York Giants, and the way that people got all over him saying it was his fault that the Giants lost that game against the Eagles, that is where I came to his defense. Because it was it was way before he stepped on the field and Coughlin told him to punt the ball out of bounds that game got out of hand. I mean, he wasn't playing defense the whole game.
You could say it's Kenny Phillips' fault. Why? Because he didn't go for he went for the ball. He didn't go for the tackle on Brent Celek. You could say
Brent Celek running 65.
You could say you could say it's Deion Grant's fault because he missed the tackle on
right.
Deshaun Jackson. I mean, you can to sit there and blame one person.
You can't blame the punter.
Right. It's not fair. It really is not fair. I mean, is he partially to blame? Yes, but
yeah.
there's a number of people. And again, that game is just surreal. I don't know if you've put yourself through the misery again, but if you've gone back,
I love doing that to myself, Anita.
And watch that those last 8 minutes of that game. It's incomprehensible.
Yeah, I know. Webster's has to come up with a new word. I absolutely agree. It was pathetic. The last 8 minutes of that game was pathetic. If you're a Giant fan or you're just a casual football fan and you're watching that game, I'll give you an example. Like my father-in-law, who could care less about sports. He's a hunter and a fisherman. He doesn't like football, baseball, basketball. But he sits there and he watches the game, and it's just to needle me. And he just goes, oh, here we go. They're going to lose again. He just couldn't believe himself. And for a guy who doesn't follow football and know what the hell is going on the field, and for him to say, how did they lose that game? That's got to tell you how bad of a performance that last 8 minutes of that fourth quarter was.
And for me, that was, unfortunately, when everyone looks back, when Giants fans look back on the 2010 season, unfortunately, that will be the game, and those 8 minutes will define what happened this season. Because in looking at the following game, granted, they still had an opportunity. They could have, beat the Green Bay Packers and gotten into the playoffs as well. But it's so hard to recover. It's so hard to turn around and recover after experiencing that type of loss. So to me, really, that was the season, and that unfortunately defined the season. But let's look at all the positives. I mean, the positives are that I think that this Giants team, they go out. I love Perry Fuel. For me, he's the biggest positive. And I know he was part of the Rooney Rule, and he made his tour around the NFL, and he participated in a number of interviews for head coaching spots all over the NFL. I'm so thrilled he's back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just the way that he engineers.
Well, the defense is night and day compared to last year under Sheridan. So, I mean, that's a tremendous positive.
The players
bought in.
The players love playing for him. The players get his system. The biggest concern going in for his system, though, is Deion Grant is a free agent. Now, Deion Grant on this roster is a third safety coming in. But the way that Perry Fuel plays this defense, he kind of uses role as this pseudo hybrid linebacker / safety. So he typically, the majority of the time, has three safeties on the field. So Deion Grant's always starting, but will Jerry Reese and will the Giants pay him starting safety money? I don't know. I think that's going to be a really big key, and that's something Giants fans need to keep an eye on. I know the collective bargaining agreement has to get panned out first, but I think it's really big and really crucial that they do bring Deion Grant back next season.
Hey, Anita, how are you? It's Joe Auriemma.
Hi.
Anita, I actually want to transition to the Jets now. Just want to get your take on, what you thought of the game in Pittsburgh. I know, the Jets spotted the Steelers at that 24-point lead. Good comeback, but again, second year in a row, they fell short, and they didn't make the Super Bowl. What can you say when you look at the Jets' season? What can you say about the team?
Very disappointing, I would say. One of the positives, I guess, that you can walk away from the game is, a sure sign of a really good coach is how he goes in that locker room and makes second-half adjustments.
Yes.
And that Jets defense was totally different. That Jets team was totally different the second half than it was the first half. Unfortunately, whether they came out flat, whatever the case may be, whatever the reason was, that second half, you felt that they were in the game. And if Ben Roethlisberger would not have had one of his very famous vintage Ben Roethlisberger scrambles to complete the pass, to convert and have another third down, another first down, so now they can eat off the clock.
Right.
I felt that, man, you get the ball back in Sanchez's hands, he's feeling it. He's feeling the groove. That offense
Absolutely.
Is able to move the ball in the air against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I felt like, they get the ball back. I don't care if it's a minute 20 left on the clock. I felt that they would be able to engineer something and put up some points against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I was feeling really good about that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you have to give Ben Roethlisberger credit. Love him or hate him, on or off the field, this is a guy that constantly wins ball games for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's amazing. You look at his numbers, 10 of 19, he barely threw over 100 yards. He doesn't put up those big-time numbers, but he's a winner. He does is win.
It's those clutch plays.
Yeah.
It's those clutch plays that he knows the game's on the line, he needs a completion, he needs to convert, whatever the case may be, and he shows up for those plays.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed the day that Mendenhall had against the Jets defense. I felt that if they would have been able to stop. I mean, but that's their MO. That's the way they play football. Stop the run, dictate, put quarterbacks in third and long position, and let Darrell Revis and Cromartie do their thing and either deflect passes or make interceptions.
Right. Yeah.
And they weren't able to do that. Mendenhall had a very solid rushing attack and rushing game against the Jets.
And he chewed him up in that first half. I mean, that was completely the difference.
I mean,
yeah.
I think another positive walking away is going into the season, everyone was so down on Mark Sanchez. Like, the Jets are not going to go to the Super Bowl. The Jets would never win a Super Bowl with Mark Sanchez. He's their weakest link. I'll tell you what, after the season, if he has not won Jets fans over or just NFL enthusiasts over to say, you know what, this young man can do it. He can put a team on his shoulders.
Yeah,
he can be a leader. I think that's one of the positive Jets fans can walk away from this season. The biggest concern is 22 free agents.
Yeah.
22 free agents.
And like
that's
you said, this
big
and
number.
The CBA
Tampa
coming up,
is
too.
Going to have a big job this offseason, again, once the CBA is worked out.
Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, they got 22 free agents. They have, guys that could be walking away from the game, like Jason Taylor, and see what happens with the CBA and have those same expectations where Rex Ryan, throws it out there, we are going to be Super Bowl champions. So, it's going to be an interesting run in 2011-2012.
Absolutely. And when you look at the list and the names of players that are free agents, you're talking about playmakers that are free agents that are going to have to make some decisions. As you said, whether they're going to retire, whether they stay with the Jets, who knows what happens. I covered Rex Ryan for the 4 years I was in Baltimore. I covered the Baltimore Ravens, and three out of the four, Rex was the defensive coordinator. So I got to know Rex really well, and I adore the man.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. I've always said if I was a player in the NFL, Rex would be like the first coach I'd want to play for. So I think that's another positive. You're approaching free agency. I think players, they see how Rex is, his heart, the way that he coaches, the way that he leads a team, and I think guys that might sway them even more to stay or sign a deal with the Jets or even other free agents that might consider coming to New York and playing for Rex. I mean, he's the kind of head coach that players love to play for, and that's definitely a plus for the Jets moving forward.
You know, Anita, it's funny that you bring that up because just, I watch these post-game interviews just to see what the reaction is out of a lot of these players and to see how, throughout the week, what exactly the coach kind of put in the players' minds and how Bart Scott is the ultimate example of what Rex Ryan does to motivate his team. Did the Patriots say all of those things? Did they do all of those things in that Patriot game? Bart Scott, they didn't do that, but Bart Scott sure came out and said it. And that goes to show me that these guys not only love playing for him, but he gets them to a point where he motivates them and makes them think, we have to go out there and you have to play for us, and this is what they're saying about you. So Rex Ryan's a very interesting coach.
It's interesting, and you guys might be aware of this story. Maybe some of your listeners are not, but the entire situation, how Terrell Suggs, Bart Scott, and Ray Lewis all went down. All three of them, all three linebackers, their contracts were up. And no one in Baltimore really knew what was going to happen. At the same time, Rex was hired by the Jets. So Ozzie Newsome kind of played Bart Scott and Ray Lewis against each other. Whoever agrees to our deal first, then the other linebacker is out because we're going to tag Suggs.
Right.
So if you want to play for the Ravens, you got to get your deal done now. You know, if you're the first one on the board to accept our deal, you're going to be a Raven.
Right.
And the other linebacker is going to, you know, lose out on money or probably have to go play somewhere else. Well, as the clock counted down and free agency started, Rex Ryan chose Bart Scott over Ray Lewis and was sitting outside his house waiting at 12:50 or 11:55 p.m. as it hit the clock for free agency at midnight. And as soon as it hit, he called Bart. He said, put away your dog. Open up your fence. I'm coming in. You're going to be a Jet. I mean, that is a really, for Rex Ryan to choose Bart Scott over Ray Lewis, who was his extension of him and that Ravens defense for so many years, to see it in Bart and to say, I want to bring you to New York with me. I want you to be the centerpiece of my defense. I want you to be my extension. The two of them have a bond that I feel will last forever. Like, I can never see Bart Scott playing for anyone else than Rex Ryan. And I know there was so much talk about Cromartie. I mean, so much talk about Revis and his holdout and everyone making such a big deal. This defense would not be the same without Revis. And with all due respect, arguably best corner in the NFL. But that defense begins and ends with Bart Scott, because he is that extension of Rex Ryan, and he knows Rex Ryan's defense better than anyone else. And I don't think he gets enough credit. I don't think he gets enough publicity. He does when he opens his mouth and he says stuff like the Patriots can't stop a nosebleed, but there's more to that relationship and there's more to that dynamic than I think what meets the eye and what a number of media people really talk about.
All right, Anita, it's Chris again, and we just want to get your thoughts on the Super Bowl and a prediction. So who's it going to be? Is it going to be Aaron Rodgers getting his first and getting that Brett Favre monkey off of his back, or is it going to be Big Ben getting his third ring and tying Mr. Tom Brady with Super Bowl championships?
You know, with all due respect to the Pittsburgh Steelers, because their organization is something that, and you hear a lot of owners in the NFL say, like, that's the organization we're trying to mimic. Like, that's the organization we're trying to lead by their formula of success. And as we talked about earlier, you know, Big Ben is a winner in crucial situations, in crucial plays. When he needs to deliver, he does. Mendenhall is very solid. Great running back. What do you need to win championships? A good defense and a good running game. But there's something about a team when it peaks. And I said this right after the Green Bay Packers game. I said, this Green Bay Packers team, they're getting healthy, because they did deal with some health issues earlier on the season.
Right.
I said, they're getting healthy and they're peaking, and Aaron Rodgers is playing like a man possessed. He's just playing spectacular football. And when you talk to the players in the NFL who played against him, they all say the same thing. He is amazing. So with that being said, I think it's going to be a very close game. I think both defenses are going to come out strong. I'm a big Clay Matthews fan, and not just because of the hair. I think Trayvon Williams is going to make some big plays in Dallas at the Super Bowl, but I think it's going to come down to Aaron Rodgers, and I think Aaron Rodgers is going to lead like a last minute and a half drive to lead the Green Bay Packers down the field and score and have the Packers win the ball game. I think this team is peaking. Their defense is solid. Aaron Rodgers is balling like nobody's business. And last but not least, because you guys know I'm really big into fantasy football,
mm-hmm.
I've known about this young kid, James Starks, for a while now.
Right.
He's a nobody out of University of Buffalo. He was on the pup list forever. But everyone I spoke to in Green Bay was telling me, Anita, this kid is spectacular. Wait till you see him run. Wait. And sure enough, they unleashed him against the Philadelphia Eagles. And now all of a sudden, everybody now knows who James Starks is. I think he'll have, obviously, you've got a week to rest. I'm expecting big, big things from him in the running game in the Super Bowl. So I'm going with the Green Bay Packers. I'm probably talking more with my heart than with my head, but I'd like to see, I think Aaron Rodgers is a great guy and a really fierce competitor and arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And I think he leads like a last minute drive down the field to win the Super Bowl for the Green Bay Packers.
Anita, excellent job. Polamalu already has the hair commercials. Maybe if the Packers win, your buddy will get some hair commercials too.
He just signed with a hair company.
Really?
Troy has Head and Shoulders. I think it starts with an S. I don't.
I have no idea. I don't use shampoo. I'm bald. So I wouldn't know.
I've always wondered, like, what do bald guys do? You guys don't like wash the scalp with shampoo?
Mach 3, baby. I Mach 3 it and Coast. Coast
really
soap, like, the eye opener.
Clay Matthews just signed with a hair shampoo company. So it, like, be prepared. You're probably going to see a bunch of hair commercials.
Hey, good
with
for
Troy Polamalu beating out Clay Matthews for hair products.
Good. Hey, you know what? I cannot wait for that battle as well as the Super Bowl. Hey, one more thing before we let you go. I noticed in your bio that you like sushi. I'm a big sushi guy. So what's your favorite roll?
Oh, wow. I mean, it depends. It depends where you go. I mean, I just, you know, I moved to New York to work for, you know, all the Sirius and the Fan and the Giants and everything. So I've only been in town for about 8 months. There's a great restaurant here. I live in Hoboken. There's a great restaurant in Hoboken called Sushi Lounge. And they have this roll that they incorporate guacamole in it.
Wow.
And, like, yeah, and it's really, it's kind of bizarre. It's kind of out there. But, like, I eat everything. I like trying out new places, and then their sushi chefs have these, like, signature really funky rolls, and I just roll with it, no pun intended. So, but tell me, what's your favorite place, and I'll go try. Is it in the city?
No, we're actually up here in Connecticut, and my favorite place happens to be Kujaku. They have those special rolls that you talked about. They have like 3 pages of them, and I mean, just anything you get there. I've never had a bad roll at Kujaku in Stamford, Connecticut. It's tremendous. And what's my favorite one? It's got to be the Third Avenue is like a spicy tuna. It's got some other stuff in there. Very tasty. And I love the wasabi and the ginger. I eat ginger like it's going out of style. I love that stuff. Can't get enough.
Well, next time I'm up in your neck of the woods, I'll definitely have to try it out.
Absolutely.
If you're down here in Hoboken, you need to go to Sushi Lab.
I miss Hoboken. I got to get back down there. I used to live down there. So, hey, listen, I really appreciate, Joe and I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some time. Excellent job. We'll definitely have you back on the podcast, hopefully when there's a NFL season next year. Well,
you got it. Hey, it's been fun. It's been fun.
All right.
Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Right, we will. You too, Anita. All right.
Okay.
Anita
Bye-bye.
Marks here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. We're back right after this.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back. Once again, you're listening to the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Joe Auriemma, Chris Sheeran. We'd like to once again thank Anita Marks for hopping on the Off the Wall podcast for her maiden voyage. Joe, before we get back to talking about football and the rest of the sports world, I have to get on my soapbox and vent a little venom here. Is that okay with you?
You got to do what you got to do, Chris.
Maybe 1 or 2 minutes.
This is your show.
1 or 2 minutes.
The reason the name of the show is Off the Wall is because you, sir, you're off the wall. You're out of there.
Oh, yes, I am, Jerry. Especially when I'm caffeinated and I have a nice big latte next to me. I won't mention any names where I got it from, but the initials are Starbucks. Anyway, here we go. Fueling Chris Sheeran for the past 3 years on the Off the Wall podcast. I don't watch Jersey Shore.
Oh, boy.
I don't. I haven't seen one episode, but I was over my mother-in-law's house, and my wife's cousin, who happens to be 14 years old, watches it religiously, and told me what one of the episodes dealt with recently. And it apparently dealt with Snooki, one of the fantastical characters on this show.
Can I please just put a little side note here
about her book being
number
whatever on the New York
no,
Times
not even
bestseller
that.
List.
But my side note is that I too am a huge fan of the Jersey Shore. I know I am from New Jersey. The show does not represent what New Jersey is about, but it is entertaining.
All right, thanks, Joe, for that. dynamite drop in. getting back to what I wanted to say, This episode dealt with Snooki and her defecation. You heard me right. Snooki going to the bathroom and then talking about it. What is wrong with you people? Stop watching this show. You're not famous. You're not. You know, me and my friend Mike, we sit around, we talk about when we go to the bathroom, we're not on TV. We're not grossing millions of dollars a year. Is that all it takes? You know, my daughter is 2 years old. We're starting to save to send her to college, but you know what? I might take that money out. Because I might want her to go the route of a Kim Kardashian. You know what, Mackenzie? All you need to do is make a sex tape. Don't worry about college. Don't worry about college. When you're 18 years old, go get a tattoo, go make a sex tape with a rap star, and you're set for the rest of your life. You're famous. You could show up at any arena, and they will treat you like royalty. If you have a son out there, don't send him to school. Send him to the gym. Have him do 1,000 crunches a day. Because apparently, if you have abs and you're good with the women, you can gross $5 million a year. Doesn't matter how hard you work anymore. It doesn't. Doesn't matter how many hours you put in. Doesn't matter. I could be at, yes, 24 hours a day. 7 days a week. 7-Eleven. And I still won't make as much money as these people in my lifetime that they make in a year. And I've had it, as you could tell. Now, I know you like the show.
Big fan.
I know you find it entertaining.
Very.
Fine. You're not one of the few. You're one of the many. I'm one of the few who doesn't like it. And who doesn't like glorifying, I can't say the word. Can't use it. If I was on Sirius, I could. But I'm not. Dog, hello? You can throw me a bone every once in a while, you know? A little fill-in on the weekend, me and Joe.
I'm in. Just let me know.
Stevie Cohn. You have your ears on? What's your 20? I say it when I'm around people. I never said it. I just need to say these things. I'm so scared for the kids tomorrow. I am. And tomorrow meaning the future. Because this is what they're growing up watching. For you, it's entertainment. It's fine because you're married, you're grounded, you have a job.
Right.
This is when you go home and you watch and you laugh. I get it.
Right.
I'm not going to, be upset at you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have these kids like my wife's cousin who's 14 and they grow up watching this stuff. And don't tell me it doesn't get in your head. Like, why am I going to go to school?
Oh, yeah.
Why am I going to go to school?
I can understand that. The situation made $11 million last year.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I will never make $11 million in my life. And he made it last year because he has rock solid abs, everyone. So go buy 7-minute abs.
Thank you for the dynamite drop-in on your part, by the way.
Or somebody comes out with 6 minutes.
No, man. 7's the number.
7 little. I fridge chicken ease. Walk through. I don't know what the rhyme is or whatever. Don't you know that old nursery fable? I just figured I'd have some fun. I mean, I want people to not only listen to this podcast to get the latest in sports. I want them to have a little fun and laugh a little bit.
Right.
And, we haven't 86'd our email or our phone number. You could still get in touch with us. And you could tell me if I'm off my rocker or if I'm off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just the way I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I weep for the future. I do. I weep for the future.
I've seen him. He openly weeps.
All right, let's get back to sports.
Sports.
So Anita talked to us about the football world. The Super Bowl is set. I was shocked. We both picked the Jets in that Steelers-Jets game. Mm-hmm. I was shocked at the way they came out in that first half, especially the fact that they won the toss, and Rex, being the arrogant you know, boisterous loudmouth that he is, says, well, I'm going to put my defense out there. Well, Rex, I hope you learned a thing or two, because you weren't, you didn't have the Baltimore Ravens defense on your sideline. You had the Jets.
Who have been good.
But Joe, that opening drive set the tone in that game.
Right.
Set, 9 minutes. They held the ball longer on that first drive than the Jets had the ball the entire first half.
And the funny thing is, I know a lot of people say, well, deferring to the second half, you know, that's a good strategy a lot of times, and you want to set the tone with your defense. But I've always been of the school where I say, you know what? I want the ball first because I want to set the tone for the rest of the game. I want my offense out there to see if we can crack this defense. And I agree. I think that he should have taken the ball first.
You got to take the ball. It's the AFC Championship game. You want your offense out there. You want a chance to get on top early on the road.
Yeah. And with that being said, you know, the defense certainly did not show up in that first half. You know, down 24-0. You cannot spot a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers 24 points. And it was a valiant comeback. It really was. But
I give the Jets all the credit in the world, and the New York Post is completely out of line in their back page saying same old Jets. And I agree with Sports Talk Radio this week. And, you know, they got all over the Post, and I got to get right on their, you know, I'm going to jump on and piggyback. Same old Jets is 6-10. Same old Jets is 8-3 and then missing the playoffs.
Right.
This is the team that got to the AFC Championship
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row. Rex is building this. I'm not going to give Schottenheimer, and that's the other thing. Schottenheimer, on that first and goal situation, he made a couple of, you know, if you're a football fan and you've been a football fan your whole life, you sit there and you go, wow, he's throwing the ball on second and third down. But if they run all four times and don't make it, why didn't you pass?
Yeah.
He mixed it up.
Yeah.
The one call I really didn't understand was when Sanchez got sacked. It was 17-0.
Mm-hmm.
It was a third and long.
Yes.
He runs a play action pass. You're down 17-0.
Yeah.
Your quarterback, you're putting your quarterback. Who are you fooling? Third and long, running a play action.
No, I hear
that. That was the most asinine play call I've ever seen in my life. The Steelers, on a third and long, if the Steelers, their ears are pinned back, they're coming to get your quarterback. Mm-hmm. And they did. That fake handoff took so much time away from Sanchez being able to find somebody, whether it be a little, you know, screen over the middle or an out pattern down the sideline.
Slant, something.
It destroyed them, and instead of, you know, driving down, maybe making it 17-3 before the half, it's 24-3 before the half.
Right, and going back to the goal line play, you know what? I think if I was in that position, I might have run it on the second down. I know what he was trying to do. I know what he was trying to do with the play action.
You can't blame him the way
he
went about the goal line situation. Like I said, if they ran four times and they didn't make it, everybody would be calling, why didn't you throw the ball? Everybody's a great Monday morning quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Everybody knows exactly what to do. I can't fault him for that. Like I said, the only thing I fault this guy for
I'll tell you who I fault right now, not even for play calling. But you know what? Santonio Holmes, just shut up. Don't say anything. You know what? You're adding fuel to the fire
that
doesn't need to be added.
And that's what the Jets brought in. They knew what they were getting when they brought this guy in.
I'm going to say this, and this might be, you know, totally out of line, but going now toward Rex Ryan, you know, he does talk a big game, and he talks the talk,
mm-hmm.
and one of these days he's going to have to back up his talk. I mean, he's going to—it's getting to a point now where you're, you know, throwing out these guarantees. I commend you because every team in the NFL should say at the beginning of the season,
We want to go to the Super Bowl
and we want to win
it. You can't fault anybody for saying that. That's why you play. That's why you go to training camp.
But the empty guarantees— it's going to, you know, one of these days.
It's going to bite him.
It's going to bite him.
It's
going to
cost him his job.
They're going to say, okay, you've been saying this now how many years?
Yeah.
And they had the team this year to do it.
Good buddy of mine, Mark Malusis, did a tremendous job on the 10-1 filling in for Joe and Evan, who were filling in for Boomer and Carton on FAN. And Mark said, you know, he said something that echoes to me. He said, the Jets have made the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row. Think they're going to make it 3 years in a row? You know what the odds of that happening are?
Yeah.
Especially with the CBA not being settled. And,
yeah.
I mean.
There's uncertainty on who's coming back, yeah. who's not coming back. It's, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles did it. You know,
yeah, right.
early, but
right.
but it's still even at that point, the odds are, you know, you have a probably have a better, you know, chance of getting struck by a bolt of lightning than that happening. There's so much parity in the NFL, and
yeah.
anything can happen.
Right.
Anything can happen on a year-to-year basis.
Really quick, let's move to because we have some Yankee stuff to get to, and I just want to keep moving this along. Jay Cutler, I think. Here's my 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that guy could have played, he would have played. And I think all of his teammates coming to back him up. I don't care what everybody else on Twitter said. That you know, they're sitting at home, as Brian Urlacher said, I believe. You know, that's just sour grapes from guys who are sitting at home and they're able to do this because they're sitting at home watching. The only problem I had with Jay Cutler was his attitude. And this, I'm
body
talking,
language.
Body language. I'm talking about like after the first or second time the offense didn't do anything. I mean, talk about manic depressive.
Yeah,
and this guy just looked awful on the sidelines.
Yeah, his
he looked like he didn't want to be there.
His body language is awful. And I have to go, you know, I said a couple of things on Twitter kind of killing him a little bit
mm-hmm.
when the situation was there because I compared it to when Phillip Rivers had the torn ACL. And he played that whole championship game. However, if he didn't feel like he could play, if the medical staff didn't clear him to come back, if Lovie Smith said he couldn't play, and Brian Urlacher, who, you know, I look at as a team captain.
That's the thing you got to realize. When all of his players,
you know,
because you know it's happened before, guys will sell guys out if they think they're not playing and they're not hurt.
Right.
But they all rallied behind this
and said
guy.
He's one of the toughest guys on the team. You know, I got to take them at their word. Now, here's my point, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. The body language was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at some of these other NFL guys, and that's the good thing about social media is that everything is so breaking
but
news
that's
is breaking
bad
news.
Thing about
but that's
it too.
Exactly. It's a catch 22 because now you have a guy like Deion Sanders commenting, and Mike Francesa, to his credit, had the line of the week. This guy's calling out somebody on toughness. This is a guy who played football basically in a tuxedo every week. I mean, that was the line of the week.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. He didn't hit anybody. Who did he hit? Who did he hit?
Nobody. And Andre Rison backslapped him in the helmet.
Oh, those were some battles, huh?
Yeah.
The good old days. Andre Bad Moon Rising.
Yes, sir.
And Lisa Left Eye Lopez. God rest her soul.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Anyway, I mean, let's go nail home the point of, you know, social media. You're right. It's great for breaking news. You know, if you want to find out what's going on in baseball and you follow guys like John Heyman, Joel Sherman, Andrew Marchand.
Our own Jack Curry.
Jack Curry. You follow any of these guys, you're going to know what happens before it happens. I mean, it's great for that. But the thing it's bad about, people start commenting. I'm not calling you out, but people start commenting on stuff before they really can take something in. And it's okay to do that, but you're going to wake up with egg on your face when you find out, hey, oh my God, I didn't know he had a sprained MCL and it was slightly torn. Hey.
Yeah, and
if the guy can't play, he's not going to play. And you're talking about, this is his livelihood. If he
right.
goes out there and rips his knee completely, how's he making money?
He
wants to keep
yeah.
playing football.
And going on my part, Chris, my part is I did criticize him, but mine was more on body language and
which
the way he
fine,
looked.
He looked like
awful.
He didn't want to be there.
He looked awful on the sideline.
He looked like he would have rather been watching at home.
And, you know, Troy Benjamin has made the point, our own Troy Benjamin here, has made the point, would you want him to, you know, walk around in crutches? Would that have been better? And you know what? I don't know. I just don't know. It didn't look like he was into the game at all. That was my point.
The problem
but,
is too many people on Twitter who've never played football in their life
and that's what I was
are
gonna say.
Commenting on
and that's
it.
What I was going to say.
Shut up. You don't know. If you've never picked up a damn football, don't comment on injuries and a guy that's getting crushed. Don't forget that offensive line is a sieve. And you know what? The Packer defense said we were killing this guy, and he kept getting back up. Kreutz, the center, said he came back to the huddle. His leg was shaking. He couldn't even put weight on it, and he was still out there playing football. So you little skinny, scrawny people on Twitter who think you know everything,
right.
Shut up. You don't. You've never played quarterback in your life. You've never been hit with the ferocity that this guy's been hit. So keep your mouth shut with your little snide comments because you don't know anything.
All right. Yeah.
Fed up.
I hear you, man. And I fully say, I on my part, I was wrong because, I've never played professional sports in my life. So on my end, I was wrong. But
if you commented on body language, and at least you're copping to it, but if you comment on the body language, I can't fault you for that.
Yeah.
Because the guy looked like he wanted to be somewhere else. He looked like he wanted to be at a wedding reception.
Yeah.
Where he was getting married and he was depressed. He didn't look like he wanted to be in the NFC Championship game with a chance to go to Dallas and play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It just boggled my mind. Anyway, let's move on before I have a heart attack. The Yankees, they signed Bartolo Colon to a minor league deal. And, of course, everybody on Twitter starts, you-know-whatting all over the Yankees. It's a minor league deal, number one.
Yes.
Number two, that means he has to make the team out of spring training. So if he goes down there and lays an egg, he doesn't make the team.
Right.
They took a low-risk opportunity.
High reward.
Low risk by bringing him in.
Right.
So, pipe down.
And not only that, but
pipe down.
My argument to everybody that was kind of, killing this move was, in previous years, haven't the Yankees always done this? Don't they go out and sign a number of veteran catchers?
Pat Godin. How key was he in 2009?
How about Aaron Small? They signed him to a minor league deal. The guy went 10-0.
Dustin Mosley. How invaluable was he last year?
They
wanted him back. He signed. Where'd he go? Oakland?
Yeah.
No, Oakland.
Yeah.
They wanted him back. He went to Oakland.
I know. And my point is that the Yankees have been doing this year in and year out. Even if it's just to push the younger pitchers, having a guy like Bartolo Colon there, is he out of shape? Yeah, maybe he's out of shape.
They said he looked good, and he threw well in Tampa, which is the only reason why they invited him to spring training.
And not only that, but you're pushing guys like Ivan Nova and Sergio Mitre, the two guys that are supposed to be on the back end of the rotation. Now you're saying, now you have competition. Now he's coming to camp, and he might, take that spot.
Yeah.
So that's all you're doing.
It makes everybody work harder if they want a spot.
Absolutely.
On this team.
And the Yankees have been doing this for years. Every team in Major League Baseball does this. They sign veteran players, and they bring them to camp for a number of reasons.
But that's these Yankee fans on Twitter. They know everything. They do. And I'm sorry, but you know what? I know you follow me, and you want to unfollow me? Fine, unfollow me. But I speak the truth. I don't hide behind words. I tell it like it is. And if you can't take it, then unfollow me. You have to start giving things a chance, okay? And if the Yankees, if they lose three or four games the first week of the season, how many games are left? I'm saying this in January.
Absolutely.
And I know in April when the Yankees go on like a three-game losing streak, if they do, you people are going to be on the observation deck of the Empire State Building on your cell phones, you're going to want to jump. Stop.
Gail Fine had the tweet of the day yesterday, GCF123. Gail said, "The day I start worrying about minor league deals is the day I've gone over the edge."
There you go.
That was the perfect tweet
yesterday.
Gail,
the voice of reason. Thank you. Now, if everyone would just get on that ship with Gail, I would be a happier person. Seriously.
They're making it seem like they just signed this guy to a four-year deal.
Oh,
and
baby.
You know what? I'm calling out. It wasn't just
Was enough there.
It wasn't just fans yesterday.
Tell me.
It was professionals. People that follow the team.
Yeah.
I'm calling them out.
Call them out. I'm calling everybody out. Call them out. And you know what? I'm not doing
it. And we let them off the hook.
Yeah. Yeah. These are people that, you read their columns and you take everything as Bible. They're not right all the time. They're not.
And I'm not saying we're right all the time.
I'm not saying I'm not. I'll be the first one to come on this podcast, and if I said something erroneous, I will cop to it. The year the Giants won the Super Bowl, I said they were going to go 5-11. I went on television, the number one RSN in the country, at 1 o'clock, and I had a big cake, and it said Giants 5-11, and I ate my words. I don't hide behind anything. If I say something that's wrong, I'll ask Joey, how many times have I been wrong and come on the podcast and say, screw that one up. I did it again this year. I said the Giants are going to be 6-10.
Which, by the way, I'm gonna roll that clip back in.
Oh, baby.
Maybe in this show, by the way. So
that's fine.
There might be a little special treat at the end of this show, everybody.
Oh, God. I just, you know, people on Twitter, I love you, but you got to calm down. You really do. I mean, it's New York Yankee baseball is not. What do I compare? It's not like world peace. You know, you're trying to get or global warming, which I want to take an inconvenient truth and take it over to Al Gore's house and say, were you quote unquote massaging the truth here, my friend? There's 4 feet of snow in Connecticut. They just, by the way, the state of Connecticut just threw their arms up and said, you know what? We're not plowing anymore. We'll let it melt. Sheeran, he's coming from Norwalk. Ah, he gets stuck on his street. Doesn't matter. Sneakers full of snow. But the New York Yankees, if they lose a game, if they don't make the playoffs, it's, you know, a lot of you guys, you'll be over it in a week. But most of you, I don't know why you let it bother you so much. I don't know why. I understand you're big fans. Hey, I'm a big fan too. I've been a big fan since I can remember. But you know, I have a family.
Yes.
You know, I don't get like, I used to get like that. I'll be completely honest with you. When I was in high school, if the Giants lost to the Cardinals, I can remember not sleeping. I can remember going to sleep after that 4 o'clock start against the Cardinals in Arizona, and I didn't sleep because the Giants lost. But you get older, and you understand these guys make money. And when they leave the locker room,
they don't take it home with them.
Doesn't bother them. Why should it bother me?
They don't take it home with
them. And when you get to that point, you'll stop losing your hair. It took me a while, and that's why I'm bald. What could I tell you?
Although I have thick, illustrious hair.
Illustrious hair.
And you know what? And I did the
same
thing. That's
gelled up like Pauly D right now.
Oh, you know it, baby.
See how I just brought it full circle?
Yes, yes.
All right, that's going to wrap things up. DirecTV must be so happy they sponsored this. Once again, just for good measure, you are listening to the Off the Wall podcast brought to you by DirecTV. Don't just watch TV, DirecTV. Call 1-800-DirecTV. I feel better now. See, this is free.
It's therapy.
I don't have to go to a therapist. It's free. I sit here, I vent, and by the end of the podcast, I can breathe easier again.
Look at that. Look at you. A whole different man.
Do you have anything to add before we leave?
I got nothing.
I see that trip to broadcasting school really paid off. All right, for Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. We will see you next week. Once again, thanks to Anita Marks for hopping on board in our first segment. We appreciate it. Appreciate the knowledge. Don't forget, we're back next week with another edition of Off the Wall right here on YesNetwork.com. For Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. Later.